Welcome to Cleaning Processes with Jerry. My podcast is dedicated to building an online community of like-minded individuals and businesses in the chemical and cleaning industry, and actually any industry. We're going to share some ideas, some tips, solutions, and tell some stories to hopefully solve problems and even expand our markets. Please join me every other week, where infrequently we're going to have a special guest that just could be you. We are considering starting up a Facebook group soon and would love your opinion. So please send me an email. At the end of the show, I'll give you my contact information. I work for Chem Station of Boston as a senior sales consultant servicing New England. I also have a blog at Hospitality Cleaning 101. If you ever have questions, feel free to reach out, and I might answer on a future podcast if you like. Again, at the show's end, I will include my contact information. Today, we have Matt Stenchfield. I didn't pronounce that correct. As Matt, thanks for joining us here today. Can you pronounce your last name? Because I messed it up twice now.
Sure, Jerry. It's Stenchfield.
Stenchfield. I was close.
You were close. You know, but a name like that, you know, you can imagine kids ribbed me at the bus stop.
Yeah, can imagine. So, and the reason I'm laughing is with us being sick a couple of weeks ago and some problems with Zoom, I shouldn't even blame it on Zoom. We'll blame it on me. So let's go ahead and start. Matt, thanks for joining today. Matt, so I don't put my foot in my mouth anymore today. Go ahead. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the different titles that you hold in the brewery industry and outside the brewery industry.
Well, let's see. I mean, as in a nutshell, I'm a career health and safety person. I've been doing occupational safety since my early 20s. I started working in environmental chemistry and laboratories and got sort of a hard lessons there on safety, just working around all the dangerous lab opportunities. And then I found an interest in doing hazardous waste remediation, worked on Superfund sites and radioactive uranium mill sites and cleaning those things up. And then in the 90s, I met a gentleman named Peter Whalen, who was one of the first people to start insuring breweries with special coverages that are appropriate for that line of work, which he still does. He does a great job at it, Whalen Insurance. And I met him at a trade show in Phoenix in 1997. And we were chatting because we both came from Massachusetts. And he said, why don't you take your occupational safety expertise and apply it to breweries. And it was a great idea. And so I started doing that. I then became a commercial brewer, continued in my work in environmental health and safety, and then owned a brewery about 10 years ago and have been really focusing on the safety aspects of beverage manufacturing for the last 30 years. So I guess that's a starter.
Well, I first had met you and it wasn't in person. I had seen you online. It might have been during COVID, before COVID. You're really involved with the Brewers Associations and with safety with inside breweries. You run many different programs, correct?
Right. So in 2013, they started the safety subcommittee at the Brewers Association, and I was chair of that for 4 years. I continue to sit on that committee now 11 years on. And from 2015 to 2022, I was the Brewers Association Safety Ambassador, sort of a Johnny Appleseed of safety, going around to brewers guilds around the country and encouraging people to, you know, to do what they could to improve the safety, safe working conditions, and also mental health of the workforce. And since that time, I have just finished a book called Brewery Safety, and it's the only book of its kind, as far as I know, worldwide. And, you know, I fill my days right now with doing safety coaching for breweries and helping other people launch projects and doing it safely.
And I've seen it. I have not read it. Now, I know that through watching some of the YouTube videos that I've seen you on, and I will do show notes at the end of this show and in my writing and put different sites where people can watch some of this. I'm going to say you go outside the lane a little bit with safety, where you involve the people a whole lot more. It's much more than just looking for hoses, wet floors, and stuff like that. It comes down to what might not be the correct word, but behavior. Am I correct?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with behavior. And, you know, in safety, there are two schools of thought. There is one which is accidents and injuries are behavior related. And the other one is accidents and injuries are a system failure, where some system that the employer put into place or is required to put into place didn't get put into place well, and it didn't, on sort of an autopilot philosophy, maintain safety for the workers. So, you know, I just don't, whenever I see something, it's like, it's either black or it's white, or you have to say this way or that way. I generally try to find out what is in the middle of all of that, because when you're on the extremes, you can't get anywhere. You can't move. You're stuck up against a wall if you only believe in behavioral safety or you only believe in systems safety. So my view is it's both. You know, the employer has responsibilities. They have compliance responsibilities. In the very, very fundamental language of OSHA, the employer has the responsibility to create a safe and healthful workplace, period. That's in the law. That's actually predates the regulations. It came out in 1970. And I like to go back and look at the law sometimes to find out what were people really thinking when they created OSHA. And that's what they were thinking. The employer has a responsibility to create a safe workplace. But there's another paragraph right underneath that that says the employee has to wear protective equipment as issued, has to abide by the ways that they're trained to do things safely, has to follow all the regulations of OSHA. And so it is not just in a, you know, it again, it's not a two-sided thing. It's either the employer or the employee. It's both. And it takes both. And so, well, let me tell you a story, Jerry. Years ago, I was at a wedding and the photographer had a one beat up old camera in his fist. And in the other hand, he had a little wooden crate with a handhold in it. And he could just carry that around and he could drop the crate down and stand up on it to get a better shot. And that was his whole thing, a box and a beat up old camera. And I said to him, hey, you know, is that all you've got? And I didn't mess him up at all. He said, you know, I learned to take pictures a long time ago. Getting great pictures is all about the people.
Wow.
And not the equipment. And that really stuck with me. And I think the same is true for safety. You know, people stay safe for three mechanisms for staying safe. They watch out for themselves, right? They see something, they perceive risk. They go, yeah, you know, if I put my hand in that boiling hot liquid, that's going to be bad. So I'm not going to do that. That's the easy one. The next one that they do is they say, somebody is supposed to look out for me. The employer has to demonstrate that they've got safety on their mind. They need to be buying safety equipment and supplies. They need to be making sure that the people around me are being safe, right? It's like, and so that, you know, you have your responsibility and you have everybody else's responsible for me, right? They're responsible for taking care of me. And if I have those two things, I'm supposed to be safe. I mean, we believe that. But there's a third thing, and one that we miss a lot, is my peer watching out for me. Not because of a regulation which says to do so, but because they know that when they do that, we have a contract, we have an unspoken contract that I'm watching out for them too.
Right.
And so that's the behavior stuff. That's the people stuff. And in businesses where I go in, I can almost like feel safety like a breeze in the wind. You know, it's like, wow, it's really safety in here. I get it. I see what's going on. I don't know what it is yet. I haven't put my finger on it, but you know, it feels good. And oftentimes that's where those cultures, the workplace cultures, have evolved to a point where people really look out for each other. It's a really kind thing to do. It's a good human thing to do, you know, besides all the reasons for safety, which we can say, you know, it ends up costing the company less money in the long run. Fewer people are injured. Production is better. Quality is better. You know, we can say lots of things about safety, but now, at the end of the day, how does it leave you feeling?
Who calls you to go into a brewery? Is it the brewery ownership? Could it possibly be an insurance company? How do you get contacted? What motivates you to go into the brewery? Are they calling you, or does frequently an insurance company call you to help people keep their premiums down and such?
Well, I do it both ways. I mean, I certainly started in this, you know, applying safety to breweries based on doing loss control for insurers.
Right.
And you know, that certainly makes sense. But the insurance market has other motivators, other cost factors and motivators that also compel companies to do a good job, to be safe, or, you know, to make sure that they meet fire and electrical codes and those sort of things. You know, they don't need me for that, in a sense that the insured is saying yes. Some people call me because they know me from the industry and they're planning on putting in a new system, or they're trying to get a hold of a runaway safety culture. And, you know, they might think that they're calling me to ask me about, you know, how do we comply with this stuff, but with these regulations, with these rules. But again, I take a cultural viewpoint of it first, and I look at that and say, you know, what are the people equations here? Is management sending a message that they really are enthused about safety and they're walking the walk? And if they're not, then I have to start with management. And if I can't turn management around, and there have been places where, to be quite honest, I've done an interview with a brewery employer and seen how dysfunctional their culture is, and just walked out. Because until management is going to show up, everything else is a waste of time.
Right.
You know, come in here and tell us what PPE to wear. Yeah, but you guys don't even have a company safety plan, and you've got 100 people here.
And then
you need a whole lot more than the right gloves.
And I've seen, I'm not talking about breweries, but industries in a whole, they'll have a safety committee. But then if you ask the safety committee, how is management or ownership helping you? You know, they're just meeting, you know, yeah, right. They want to know about the PPE, but well, we're not buying it this month.
Safety committees work when you have an established safety culture.
Right.
But if you think safety committees are going to get you to safety culture, that's ass backwards, and it doesn't usually work that way.
Correct.
So the idea behind a safety committee, or in a very small brewery, the idea behind saying, here's our head brewer, they went to Siebel, they must know more about safety than the rest of us, let's put the safety hat on that person. You know, without realizing that person may not have the time, the wherewithal, or the communication skills, or the management mandate to get safety distributed across all employees. And so that's the existing paradigm of safety in small businesses. It's either one person's the safety go-to, or a committee of people who are trying to share that load a little bit. But I look at everybody who's not on the safety committee, and I'm going, why aren't you involved in your own well-being? And so again, that's the human factor, and getting everybody there to the table and hearing what they have to say.
Right. In a previous conversation you and I had, I get called in to help with a chemical safety, just a piece of the pie. And they'll have me come in and do an introduction, talk some generalities of different things, OSHA, how to read SDS, where the SDSs are held at, you know, that they have them on a wall, easy, accessible, not locked up in the owner's desk drawer, and you can only get there up to 5 o'clock and things like that. So we review those little things. And when they call me in, you can see it doesn't take long to figure out why you're there. You know, do they really want to learn? Do they really want to encompass the whole thing? Or do they just want to check mark that six people attend it and, you know, we're done with that? So I always applaud anybody. And even when I don't feel that they're taking everything to heart, I at least applaud management and ownership for having me in. They're at least trying something, because there I might ask somebody else and they're not even sure what I'm talking about. But I will say, and I know you do stuff outside of breweries, I do say that breweries are much better than some other organizations I've seen that are really, you know, fly by the seat of their pants. Let's just put it that way. You know, they seem concerned. They're much more concerned, because I think it comes out of the industry of they're doing a quality product. They're doing a product that can easily spoil. Something can happen to it, you know. If it's the tanks aren't cleaned properly and stuff like that, because years ago I did a lot of restaurants, and some of the restaurants, you know, I would never eat in. Let's put it that way.
I know you had to scrub out your eyes for what you just saw.
Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say. So
yes,
I like the brewery industry a lot better. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, it is generally good. I think brewers have their hearts in the right place. They're a really good group of people by and large. And, you know, I will return to that with people and say, look, you know, you've got that going for yourselves. And you also have what brewers are pretty good at is an oral tradition of safety. They say, this is how we do it here. You know, oh, hey, you know, I do it that way. It's a little bit better. The shortcoming with that is it can be inconsistent and it ends up not getting written down. But if you have that culture, it's not a big stretch to improve it a little bit and make sure that you've got documentation of having done a hazard assessment and that that has resulted in an SOP that has safety stuff built into it as well as the procedural stuff. And that way people start to see safety not as an obligation, but as just another value like quality, which, you know, nobody's going to poo-poo quality and be serious about it. People shouldn't be poo-pooing safety, but they do because they view it as an obligation, as the man telling them what to do, so to speak, rather than as this is the way to run a good business. This is the way to be kind to my coworkers and myself. You know, it's if you look at it that way, it becomes more of a value and you can just give up the fight. You know, don't fight against safety, adopt it and go with it like you would with quality or with sustainability or with good community relations with your customer base or any other business practice.
Right. Now, the book you've written, what motivated you to write the book? Were you approached by a different group or had something you'd been thinking about for a long time?
Well, it was a coming together of those things because I had been thinking about it. There was no book. Sitting on the safety subcommittee at the Brewers Association, people were often tendering us questions like, what are the general OSHA rules that I need to follow here for a brewery? And, you know, that's not an easy answer. It doesn't lend itself to an email, let's say. It needs a book. And there was no book for it. And Brewers Publications made it known that they were thinking about having somebody write the book. And I put in a proposal. I think other writers did as well. They selected me. And, you know, it was quite a process. It's the biggest book that the Brewers Publications puts out. My chapter on physical safety was longer than a lot of books that they've published just on physical safety components. So they ended up breaking that into multiple chapters.
How many pages?
It's 267 pages. It's got some really, really helpful charts in it. At the end of every subject area is a little table saying these parts of OSHA might apply to you. So if you're trying to achieve that sort of documentary compliance, then the book's really good for that. But most of what it is, you know, here's the kind of hazard that comes with this activity. And here are the ways that you can mitigate, reduce the opportunity for those hazards. And then that way it's very practical. But there's a substantial chapter on brewery culture. There's one on KPIs, key performance indicators. You know, in safety, most of the KPIs are backward looking, like what was last year's accident and injury rate? Well, oh, that's too bad. That was last year, you know, but Then you're asking yourself, how do we do better? How do we get it better next year? And so I think that chapter is rather novel in that it's got lists and lists of KPIs. Many of them are forward looking and they're all for safety improvements in safety programs and safety culture.
And then I understand you are even looking to write future books. Am I correct?
Some of the projects that I'm working on right now are 101 toolbox talks for manufacturers, you know, so getting outside of beverage manufacturing, there are a lot of commonalities in any kind of manufacturing. I could do another 101 book on construction safety, and I could do one on service industries, you know, on hospitals and schools and retail establishments. So that's part of it. And the fun one I'm working on is a book called How to Make Trees Fly, which is an all ages craft book on things that you can make with wooden paper that are fun to fly.
Wow.
Because I can't sit still. There it is.
Now, how much traveling are you doing now? You live in Vermont. You travel throughout the United States, correct?
Not very much, because since the Brewers Association doesn't have the safety ambassador position anymore, which they subsidize through member dues. So now it falls to a guild to pay my expenses to travel. Okay. And so those speaking engagements have gone down, But you know, I get with people in other ways.
A lot of Zooms.
Zoom meetings for sure. Trying to hook up at, you know, the national conference, the craft brewers conference every year, which I've been at for, you know, 20 years and running. So
what's the biggest problem that you see in breweries with safety? I imagine that's $1,000 question, but I mean, what is the problem that you see the most or the one that you scratch your head on?
Well, there are certainly a lot of things, the slips and trips in the wet areas and areas where there's a lot of stuff on the floor, is a big one. Some breweries have managed to tame that beast better than others. Elevated surfaces and work platforms falling off of heights and things falling off of heights. You know, you've got thermal hazards, you've got electrical hazards, and you've got pressure hazards. One of the things I do when I first look at a business is I go, what's the housekeeping like? You know, because that is kind of a litmus test on everything else. If housekeeping is good, then I see that there's a kind of an attention being paid to, like, what are our walking and working surfaces? How are we stacking goods at height? And those things generally, you know, reflect the safety mentality of the business. Look at housekeeping.
That's great. So as we wrap this up about the book, where is the best place to purchase the book? Would it be the Brewers Association or Amazon?
Well, you can get it on Amazon for sure and, you know, leave a review there or whatever. But brewerspublications.com is the publishing arm of the Brewers Association. And if you use the code MATT10, M-A-T-T and the number 10, you'll save $13 there.
I will put that information again in the show notes. Someone just has to hit the link and go to it and put in the code number. We appreciate that.
That's right. Just enter in the coupon code and that's our thanks for being a listener to your podcast.
Well, we appreciate you coming here today. I hope to do some edits and get this out. Well, of course, Thanksgiving's coming up, probably be after Thanksgiving, but I hope you and your family have a happy Thanksgiving. And I appreciate you joining us here today. One last thing I will also put in here, which is the best email address you'd like people to reach out to you at?
The best one is paletjack, P-A-L-A-T-E, jack@gmail.com. It's obviously a play on words. Having to do with the implement used for moving a lot of goods around a brewery, a pallet jack, but also because you know, I like all the flavor and sensory stuff with judging beer and so on. So that's where the pun came from.
That's the one I've been using to contact you. So we appreciate you being here with us today, and please let's stay in touch. All right,
you sure will, Jerry. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and don't overdose on tryptophan.
I won't. You take care. Bye-bye. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Jerry today, and we wish to thank you, the listener. If you like the information we are sharing here, please subscribe, like, and share. If you have a question that you would like answered on the show, then just please make that request in advance. Remember, the opinions shared on this podcast are Jerry's, and he will be responsible for them. If you have any questions, ideas, or comments, or would like to become a guest, please send an email to jerry@hospitalitycleaning101.com. Have a great day. Remember to wash your hands for 20 seconds and stay safe.